The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, evening? Which evening? All right, evening. Good evening, everyone. My name is Hadar Harris. I'm the Executive Director of the Center for Human Rights and Humanitarian Law, and we want to welcome all of you here to the third installment of our Human Rights Film Series. This is the sixth year that we've been doing this series, and we do it in collaboration with the Center for Social Media on main campus, as well as a variety of other organizations, too numerous to mention, also because I don't remember all of them. But we are grateful for their collaboration. Film screen here on Wednesday nights and on main campus on Thursday nights. We have one more week after this one. Next week we will be joined by some people from Witness, which is an organization that does training of training with human rights defenders around the world to help them use media and video to promote and protect human rights. The whole essence of the film series is an exploration of how video is used to promote and protect human rights. Witness is one of the organizations unique in the world that's really working hands-on with NGOs around the world to do this. Next week, I think Sam Gregory is coming from Witness, and we'll be screening some films that they've just recently completed on human rights in Burma. And so don't miss it next week, 6 o'clock here in this room next Wednesday. I also wanted to bring to your attention a couple of other events, and then we will be hearing from the Rwandan ambassador to the United States. Just to put on your calendars, tomorrow in this room, which is why all these chairs are set up, there will be a full-day conference on trafficking in persons, trafficking in human beings. The conference starts at 9:30 in the morning, goes on with an evening panel up until about 8 o'clock tomorrow night. It's filled with a who's who of people working on trafficking issues from a variety of different perspectives. The schedule is outside with the other flyers if you're interested in coming all day tomorrow. Also, on Tuesday, November 8th, we'll have the next installment of our Human Rights Defender Speaker Series. This is a great series of human rights defenders from around the world who speak about why they do the work they do. They talk a little bit about what they do. We started last night, for those of you who were able to join us, with Farida Ghulam Ismail from Bahrain, who gave a very interesting presentation about her work on women's rights in Bahrain. So on Tuesday, November 8th, we'll be joined by Dr. Asha Bajpai, who's a children's rights expert from India, who's teaching here actually this semester as part of our Gender and Legal Education in India project, and she'll be speaking about how she got involved in the work that she does and the very important stuff she does. So those are just a few things to keep in mind and to put onto your calendar. If you are not signed up for the center's listserv, there's a flyer, how to get onto the listserv. Again, just outside the room, you'll get one email per week with a whole slew of activities of things that are going on. How many people here are on the listserv? You, the rest of you should sign up. And do you get more than one email? No, exactly. And do you look at that email whenever it comes in to know all the great things that you're going to go do?
Yes.
Great, okay. So, with all of that said, it's my great honor and pleasure to introduce Ambassador Zakin Senga, who is the Ambassador of Rwanda to the United States of America and a variety of other places at this point. He was born in 1958 in Rwanda and studied and graduated from Makerere University Medical School. So if we have a medical emergency, no problem, right? He has a degree in human medicine, and he also has a master's in diplomatic studies from the University of Westminster with, and a certificate in strategic studies. I'm not even going to try to link between being a doctor and a diplomat and how that may work or may not work. Anyway, he practiced medicine both in Uganda and in Lesotho before joining the Rwandese Patriotic Army in December 1990. He served as Secretary General in the Ministry of Internal Security, overseeing the National Police and the Prison Services, and has been Ambassador to the State of Israel, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and now the United States, with concurrent accreditation to Brazil, Mexico, and Argentina, as well as the Bretton Woods Institution. So he's a very busy man. We are really pleased and honored to have you here and look forward to your comments and some questions, and then we will screen the film. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adan. You have described a man who is a jack of all trades and a master of none. That's me. So I've moved around everywhere. So the link between diplomats and medicine is that every medical personnel is a diplomat, because you are dealing with people and those issues, some of which are very complicated.
But when you were a diplomat, you caused heart attacks.
Yeah. Yeah, but then you know how to source them. Good. So, thank you very much for inviting me. I think this is not the first time I come to this institution. When we talk about Rwanda, really, sometimes I fail to get where to begin from, because it's such a huge, huge area, and I always want to sit with somebody for hours and hours and talk. I'm not very good at talking, passing a lot of messages to very many people. But anyhow, I will try. Today, you are going to watch a film, sometimes in April. I watched it briefly, but it told me already the story which I already knew. I have also watched Hotel Rwanda, but I find this one, in particular, heartbreaking, more than the Hotel Rwanda. Heartbreaking to Rwandans, especially those who passed through those scenarios of 1994, because it depicts exactly, almost exactly, what went in that particular, during that particular period. It goes through the origin of this genocide, from planning to execution to reconciliation. It gives you an idea of all these things. And yet, it also depicts heroism by some people in difficult circumstances. You will see it, someone who is caught between two different circumstances. And he turns out to be a hero. He's not really, you know, cowed down. But it also depicts a survivor of genocide as another hero. Unlike the Hotel Rwanda, this depicts a survivor of genocide as a hero, really. You will see it. So this is about the film, and how these films help in preventing further human rights abuses is simple, because I think the two films, Hotel Rwanda and Sometime in April, have been the most important tools, especially to people outside Rwanda, and particularly the American public. It has been a tool to help them understand that there was a problem in Rwanda, and that it was of that magnitude. So these tools have helped Americans to understand what went wrong, and therefore to imagine what could have, why the international community didn't come in to solve this problem. So I think it could be, and because it is a film, it is something documented, and it lives with us for long, it helps us to keep on reminding. That's why we always remember, that's why we always document. So this is one of those important aspects. I think, as far as Rwanda is concerned, these movies have been very, very good in showing exactly what happened and challenging people what should be done probably in the future, if people can learn lessons. Now, one question that comes to my mind is, why does a genocide happen? Not only in Rwanda, everywhere. That is the question. Why should it happen? Why should it repeat itself? In the case of Rwanda, I can give you maybe there are about three or four reasons why I think genocide happened in Rwanda. These are not unique to Rwanda. You will find them in all those cases that took place. But I think in our case, mainly it was possible because, number one, the issue of leadership. Leadership is very important everywhere you go, whether it's in a university, whether it's in politics. Leadership is important, because without good leadership, the bad leadership sets the stage for everything else. Bad leadership brings out bad economics, brings about bad social aspects, and it goes on. So leadership in Rwanda was bad. It was leadership that was not interested in people, a nation. What else is the resource? You talk about minerals and other things, but the most important thing, why human beings exist, because of people. And if you're a leader and you are not interested in the in the people, then I don't know what else you are interested in. So that's the big, that's the starting point. The second aspect in our case was injustice. Injustice, social, economic injustice. We had people who were second-class citizens. They had been dehumanized. They were no longer people. They are second-class. You had bad leadership, I told you. We had people who couldn't have access to school. We had people who wouldn't have jobs. And we had people who had lived as refugees for the rest of their lives in perpetuity in the outside as refugees. All those are bad elements. You know, you believe as a refugee, some of you may be refugees, you know what it means. You are dehumanized, you are not a human being, you are a second-class citizen. Whatever, maybe in America probably. That's the only country I've come across that allows people to come in and get integrated. In other cases, I have lived as a refugee myself. I know I had never been seen myself as a citizen of any place. So I always had that in my mind. And it is still there, actually. It still haunts me. Of course, injustice in, economy, when there is poverty, due to poor policies, if a country cannot make good policies for improving the social status of people, then that is another bad element. So in addressing these problems in the post-genocide Rwanda, our focus was mainly to deal with the issue of governance leadership, number one, because that's the most important thing. Number two, to deal with those injustices in education, in gender discrimination, in, you know, refugees. If you have, Rwanda had the highest number of refugees in Africa for ages. So if you didn't have to deal with the issue of a refugee, then that wouldn't be the best way to go after this. But we're also trying to look at how we can deal with those other injustices in terms of developing our justice system to make sure that it deals with these problems. And we had to deal with the question of reconciliation. Because after genocide, what we see, anywhere in any country where we have these problems, there is no way, especially in Rwanda where we have to live in that small country, as big as Maryland, and where, in the case of the man we see, caught between supporting this and losing his life, you know, it's a situation that was bound to cause problems after genocide. So, whatever is happening today in Rwanda, it's mainly geared towards dealing with the issue of leadership, dealing with the issue of governance, dealing with the issue of fighting impunity, and looking at how we can deal with the issue of improving our economy. So, where we can ask questions, there are a number of strategies are put in place, a number of policies, we have a number of institutions that have gone in place, but all are geared towards dealing with the issue of the three issues I have told you. Whether it is decentralization, which is started in 1999, to make sure that people in Rwanda can also participate in their day-to-day activities, be it in politics, be it in economy. So we decentralized to make sure that down in the communities, people are also participating in their own decision-making process. That's why we did that, to make sure the issue of leadership is addressed. So since 1999, local leadership is being elected. And decentralization was not just political decentralization, but also economic decentralization. They have a budget so that they can deal with their own, not only political issues, but also social, economic issues that affect them just locally. That was the first time it ever happened in our country. Whether it is in a going for democratic elections, multi-party like we did, that was geared towards allowing the people of Rwanda to make sure they elect their leaders, to make sure that they have the culture of accountability is established. That was the first. When we developed our constitution, it was to put in major principles that safeguard the people of Rwanda. If you look at our constitution, it's all about safeguarding the people of Rwanda from these problems. So people will say, well, Rwanda is not making progress on this year, but it is only yesterday that we started. It's in progress. This is the effort that started just 3 years ago, not even about 10 years ago, are in progress. And we are learning, it's a learning curve. But I can assure you the purpose is addressing the issue of governance and the issue of politics. If it is in economic reform, it's about trying to form an economic system that can generate more wealth among our people. If it is in schools, it's about allowing everybody to go to school to get more knowledge and they become like me. So that next time I'm not be told to go and get an axe and kill. You know, that is, and also it's a hope. It creates hope because I can't go, even if I'm poor in Rwanda, I can go to other countries and work like I used to work. So education now, for example, is free for everybody. Primary education, and now I think these coming years we are also trying to get 3 years in high school to make them free and compulsory as well. To make sure that, and first of all, the most important thing about our education is that it's non-discriminatory. And it favors women because they have been discriminated. Non-discriminatory, we no longer say those some students have to get 100% in order to go to school. Others have to get 50 to go to school. But that imbalance that characterized the past was injustice. So we have completed. They do the same exam, they have access to the same school. You know, this was not the case before 1994. So I can give you just one example. Before 1994, we had about 700,000 students in primary schools. But now we have 2 million students in primary school. You can see within a short time, we want to make sure that everybody has access. Well, you can ask me the question of quality. Maybe there is a problem there, but we are moving ahead. Someone is in the classroom, and it is comparative. We have heard about stories about women involvement in Rwanda, that Rwanda is the only country that has got the highest number of women in parliament. This is true. It's a constitutional provision. And the purpose was to make sure that our women also participate. In actual fact, after genocide, women organizations were the first rebound. And therefore, they are part and parcel of the progress that we're having today. So why should I join them in any decision-making process? So these are certainly measures and many others that were put in place to answer the questions that relate to genocide and other problems in Rwanda. There are so many things that have happened. We have reformed our legal system to make sure that it is capable of dealing with our own problem. You have heard about the Gachacha. This is not new. Gachacha is mainly a political decision that was taken that we go back to our justice system in the past so that it can help deal with 120,000 people who had in prison. If you had used the classical system, justice system, it would have taken us 150 years to complete these cases. So a political decision was taken that why don't we look into our past? And this is something that used to be good for us, which can help us, one, ensure that there is expedited justice, because we don't have to see 120,000 people in prison for 130 years. We want them out of prison through this mechanism, and then there are many other things that we are looking at. It's not about justice system. It's also about schools, it's about technology, it's about many other things. So we can't focus on prisons only for the rest of our lives. So that's why we went for Gachacha. Mind you, people have said it's not again according to international standards. We know. But international standards will take 150 years to achieve this. So we know it has got its own report. We are every other day reviewing Gachacha, but I can assure you, as I'm talking today, Gachacha is becoming something that we never even expected. We have never seen any Rwandan coming forward and point to a leader, and I'm a general, or anybody, and say, you did this. It has never happened. But now people come and say, general, you did ABCD, and these are ordinary people. In any way, in any case, maybe it will bring more about, people will not fear. So they will ask those leaders to be accountable. If now a minister can come and go in front of Gachacha in a local village and tell them, look, this is what happened. It is not that the minister is guilty, but he's accounting the people to tell them what happened. It's a good thing. So Gachacha, which we really even ourselves thought would work, but we really now see that it can be a good tool. Not only to ensure there is reconciliation and is justice, because nobody should come out of prison through Gachacha and think it is an amnesty. They should go through Gachacha, get some punishment. Some of them already are doing what they call community service. There is a law allowing these people who have passed through Gacaca to do community, they call it the TG, which is the travel, the intelligence there. That means works of public, general public interest. They have started. So as people are passing through Gacaca and they are telling the truth, and a survivor, if I am a survivor and I know where my mother was buried, and I'm going to exhume her, and every other year I put flowers on her tomb, isn't that good? Because previously I didn't know. But now someone has come forward and told him the truth, and sometimes say, I'm sorry. You know, the power of confession and forgiveness is very, it's a very important thing. Don't underestimate Gacaca. Some people have criticized Gacaca, but I think it's because they don't know. They don't know what we have gone through. About our security, we need to get, Rwanda is now more stable than any other country in the region. This is very good. It doesn't mean that it can remain like that, but it is very good because we have to ensure security of people there. Otherwise, if there is insecurity, it causes people to remind about what happened in 1994. It's not only in our country, but we are trying to also to work with us to make sure there is security in our region. Rwanda now has contributed 2 brigades to go to Sudan, both in 2 missions, UN mission and African Union mission. It's not that they want to go there, it's because we know it's good also to go, not to be indifferent on whatever is happening around the world. We have to, because we know what it means for people not to pay much attention. Well, I wouldn't like to take much of your time, but there are so many things you have heard. If you have a question, I can answer particularly. But we have really, if you look at Rwanda in all aspects, from a social, economic, political, cultural, name it, the graph is on the positive end. It's not going down here. I know it because I've lived through all this. I've lived through from 1990 to 1994. Afterward, I've lived through this. Each time I go to Rwanda, I see the trend. It's not where I want because we have passed through difficulties, but I think it's a positive trend. I'm ready to answer any question, but finally, I think you as students and people, campaigners of human rights, it's very important to make sure that people are aware always of dangers. When there is a problem anywhere, there are dangers. Make sure that people are constantly looking at this. And secondly, I think we should encourage different societies who have passed through what we have passed through to make sure that they also not look at one aspect of justice and reconciliation. Because, you know, in Rwanda, if you go to take someone to court and he's acquitted or not, that doesn't mean that actually this person has been integrated into society. You need some integrative processes of reconciliation, because if it's not there, it doesn't make sense anyway. So every society has got some good elements in their own society, name it. So as far as reconciliation is concerned and justice, people should not look at only the courts, they should also look at other aspects. One last point which really confirms this is that, Hadar, you know Justin. I was in Chicago recently in the summer for summer holidays, and I met a lady who used to be your colleague here. Now, our constitution provides, you know, this Gacaca is ad hoc. It will not continue like this. But once the number of prisoners have completed, we have done always the number of prisoners, our system, our constitution allows what they call mediators. That means before it takes me to court, you have to take it in the local people only your village and try to see whether you cannot resolve this problem. And this is called the institution of mediation. And I've seen Justin making manuals to the mediators in the villages. In Rwanda we call it Abunzi. And it is amazing on how these people are working. The courts are not congested with minor cases. So the people have been involved in different small minor cases in the villages, and therefore it increases confidence, increases participation, increases also some kind of accountability at that local level. Let me stop here. If you ask me any question, I will answer it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have just a couple of minutes for some questions. The ambassador said that he will take some questions. If you have any questions, you can come to the microphone. Just as you're thinking, the ambassador referred to Justine and the work that she has been doing in creating manuals for mediators. She was an LLM student here 2 years ago who completed her LLM and who was really critical in helping us to and inspiring us to do a full series of programming around the 10th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide that sparked the Genocide Teaching Project, which is ongoing and which some of you participate in, which goes out into local schools in the D.C. community and also provides a lesson plan to educators around the world in remembering the Rwandan genocide and also looking at lessons for how to stop ongoing current genocides from happening. Do you have any questions, or we'll start the film and then there may be questions in a bit? I think that looks like the consensus here, if that's okay with you. Okay, that's great. Just one last thing. We at the Center for Human Rights have a longstanding commitment to remember and to stop genocide. We're screening this film tonight and ask the ambassador to come to say a few words about what's happening today in Rwanda, because we think it's important to both put this into perspective and, as he said, to keep on our minds what is happening, not just what has happened in Rwanda, but what is happening today in Sudan. There are students here who are involved in Students Taking Action Now for Darfur. You want to raise your hands, those of you who are involved with STAND? They're doing some wonderful work and need help in helping to raise consciousness and understanding about what's happening today during the genocide in Sudan, for individual people to take action to stop it. If you're interested in getting involved, please talk to those students. Raise your hands again, please. Or you can come and talk to us at the center about stuff. One last thing, I want to thank Olivia for her work in putting together the resource guide that all of you should have, or there are copies of outside, in helping to get the ambassador here today. So with that said, without further ado, we will start the film. Thank you again, sir. At this point, we're a little bit later than we usually are for this film series. Thank you for staying. I don't know, Mr. Ambassador, if you want to take any questions or if anybody has any comments at this point.
Just before the questions, this is the story. It is a film, but I wasn't Rwanda. This is exactly what happened. Some of those are the real places where they were. Some of those actors are real survivors like this lady. And one thing you need to realize is how this man, Muganza, Harold Peck, the dilemma he's facing with his brother in Arusha, with his children dead, coming from the other side, and how does he live in Rwanda? The other thing, that even me myself, I sometimes wonder how I have managed to come out of that to this level. How I have managed to come through all of that and become an ambassador. It's always very difficult for me to tell the story, but the film tells the story. One thing I know for sure is that we have survived and we are looking forward. If we look back to those days, Rwanda would be no more. So we've decided that we have to look ahead. You can see these children at the end of the day, they are smiling. If you go to Rwanda, you never think of something. I don't know how many of you have been to Rwanda. If you go to Rwanda, you would think nothing happened. Deliberately, one move ahead. This doesn't mean that there is no pain. There is pain. But I think the only way to overcome pain is to move ahead. That's why we have Gacaca for reconciliation. That's why we are calling everybody, free education. That's why we have an accountable administration. That's how we are building our economy. And that's how we are doing all these things. That's why we are going to Darfur. That's why we're doing all sorts of things in one way. It's because we are motivated by this story. We don't want it to happen again. And we know for sure that if we don't do it ourselves in Rwanda, nobody will do it. Because nobody came during that time. And that's why we believe, I'm 100%, 150% sure that such a thing can never happen again in Rwanda. Never. Questions?
Speak a little louder.
If we can come near.
Just a switch right on the top. You should turn it on.
Is it on?
Yes.
Yep. I have a lot of questions about the past, but I'm going to put them aside for now, especially since you've been talking about the future. Can you please tell us how the genocide is taught in schools today? First of all, is it taught, and if yes...
studied or...
Is it taught in schools today in Rwanda? Yes, the genocide. Is the story of the genocide, and if so, how is it taught? I mean, this is obviously a very sensitive subject. It's only been 10 years.
You know, we are in the process of trying to document all this that happened. If you go to Rwanda, you see almost everywhere there were killings, there is a memorial site. And we have one major one in Kigali, which tells you the whole story from those olden days through our history, through genocide and after. If you go to Kigali and you go to this museum, it will tell you the whole story from the beginning to the end. And it will show you where we are going. So we want everybody in Rwanda to know that this happened. But also to learn that the fact that we are moved ahead, even young people, but let me tell you that the population of Rwanda now, below 25, is about 60-something percent. So it's a young society, and it's a hopeful society. So we are saying, look, this happened, but you should never do it again. It's bad. So we are telling everybody, I don't think we are yet doing it systematically, because, you know, we still have a lot of challenges. We are still in the documentation phase. And the Gachacha is coming up and telling us more stories about this. This gentleman was recounting his story, telling his brother what happened. This is a man also who is teaching, he's a teacher, supposed to be a teacher there. So the whole, slowly by slowly, people will know what happened and people will know that it's bad and people will not do it again. So the story is coming, sinking, because every April we commemorate everywhere. And people cry and people come, you know, memories come again. But at the end of the day, people live together. That's why you see that even 100, and now we have about 60-something prisoners that have been released into the community. And we haven't seen any case of retribution. That shows what? It shows that the population, the community is just coming to terms with the reality and moving ahead. So they are, even the survivors of genocide are now rationalizing and say, well, what do? We move ahead. So we think that maybe something is coming, you know. But I can't tell you for sure that we are there yet. Maybe we still have a long way to go.
I beg your pardon. There was any resentment or angry that the international response was not quicker or quicker?
Certainly, resentment, for sure. The whole film tells you this. But now we have also come to realize, look, resentment. Nobody listens. But if we are in the process of forgiving some people who killed in the prisons, why not? What about the rest of the people? My president came to Washington University last year, and the same question was put to him, that do you forgive American people for not having done anything? And he said yes, because we are even forgiving the people who did the real killing in Rwanda. What about others? But the message is, we would like the international community to come and help us, to work with us as we pass through all these things. And most important, to understand this. And that's why I think these films are very powerful. But understanding and working with us, these are all these different things to do. But we no longer have any illusion. There is nothing. Even if you blame everybody, what until when? But I think time would come. In the last caption, they say that those who stood by and they have not been persecuted. And we know there are some who stood by. There are those who stood by because they were very far away. We have no resentment anymore yet. But each time we get problems, when you are in problems, you always remember bad things. But anyway, by and large, the resentment is there, it will always be there, but you rationalize. You know, you forgive. The reason why I said this film shows the heroes. The hero is not this man. The hero are those survivors you saw who are now being told that you have to reconcile. You know? We have demanded so much from them and we have not given them anything. So they are heroes. We think they are heroes because they have accepted. They die. They live through all those problems. At the end of the day, they are even forgiving. They are heroes. Those are the heroes, those who survived. That young lady you saw in church, she's a hero. That is the hero of the film.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
You've talked a lot about the process of reconciliation, and you've been talking more about the Gacaca than the ICTR. And there was an article recently in the Washington Post that the Gacaca courts, which there are thousands of them, have been overflowing with participants. Can you just give me or give the audience a bit of an idea of a better idea of the differences between the Gacaca and the ICTR and your view on the shortcomings of both?
The ICTR and the Gacaca.
Yes, I mean, one is for the masterminds of the genocide, your personal opinion. I see that you've leaned towards focusing on the Gacaca tribunals.
Yeah, the ICTR has probably dealt with some 20 people for the last 11 years now. And even our national courts, the traditional classical justice, has done away with a few thousands. It will take us, together with the International Tribunal, over 150 years to deal with the 120 prisoners. So Gacaca comes as our innovation, our traditional system that was used before the coming of Europeans, of the Germans and the Belgians. It was a system dealing with minor crimes, not things like genocide, because we never had those problems. The reason why we took Gacaca was, why don't we get over all these problems? Moreover, in a short time, so we can also concentrate on further reconciliation. Gacaca will not do the kind of justice system we'll see in Arusha or in national courts, but it will bring about the truth. People will come forward and tell the truth of what happened. And this truth will be recorded. This truth to the survivors will be hearing. And as it is recorded, then it becomes a future teaching tool, educational tool for future prevention of genocide. Gacaca, another thing that Gacaca has got some punitive element, because we don't want people to think that it is an amnesty. Why? Because since we got this classical justice, we have never seen anybody being prosecuted in Rwanda for the crimes they have done, either in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s. In actual fact, in 1963, there was a law which is codified in the books to exonerate those who committed the crimes in 1959. In 1973, after the massacres again, there was another law passed to exonerate those who committed the crimes. So the history of Rwanda is impunity throughout. So Gacaca, people say, what is the difference between the truth and the reconciliation in South Africa? Ours is a bit different, because if we say, tell the truth and go away, it will be misinterpreted, especially by survivors, that you are exonerating, so someone can kill and go away. So that's why Gacaca has got some punitive measures. In fact, every other day you're asking about challenges. We realize that we have to make it even less punitive for the sake of reconciliation. I think it was reviewed last year, in June, it was reviewed to make sure that it cuts the process, it makes it faster. And now they are even debating on whether they should not even ask it to put less punitive. For example, we would continue either community service, which you think is punitive. People will go and work for what I mentioned as teacher before. That is works of public interest. If they can go and work and think that this is a punishment rather than you going home directly, it will help. But imagine a situation where you have got your husband who has been in prison for all these years, and now he is back. Or you have your son who is back. Somehow you think There is something better in that system. But for the survivor, maybe it's not better. Maybe they are bitter, especially when they see this kind of thing. But at the end of the day, reconciliation is a process. It is not one day thing happening. So as we walk together, as we rub shoulders, as we become angry, as we sometimes rationalize, that's the nature of human being. So down the road, it's much better. So Gacaca has got its own loopholes, but by and large, I mean, it's allowing 60,000 to go away from prison, going to the community. It's allowing people to know the truth. It's allowing people to know where their loved ones were buried. Now everybody knows. Some people know. You know, so through Gacaca. If it was not for Gacaca, I wouldn't have managed. So Gacaca is totally different. It was a political decision made by the government of Rwanda for the sake of reconciliation and expediting justice. It can never provide justice like we know in Arusha, but it will be very important for reconciliation in Rwanda. Well, if you have questions, I have all the time here. I don't know.
I think that maybe we'll get a little less formal.
Yes.
Those people who may want to stay.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Ask you questions. Just one last comment before we thank the ambassador. Rwanda today is doing amazing things. They have the highest number of women in parliament. As you heard the ambassador say, more school children are going to class than ever before. And Rwanda has taken a consistent stand and has sent troops and people on the ground to stop the genocide in Darfur. And so they have taken very much the prism of what happened in their immediate past and are trying very hard to move forward. I want to thank on behalf of all of us the ambassador for coming tonight, for staying through the film with us, which I'm sure is not easy to watch again, and for giving us your insight into what is going on today and what we can learn from you. Thank you so much.